Welcome to the Shelf Shedding Movie Show. I'm your host, Jason Dubray. I'm going to continue with my Vinegar Syndrome series here with my April delivery. Only three movies, so this will be a fairly short episode. And on the whole, this is kind of a 1980s collection of films, but three completely different films. Certainly don't regret spending time with any of them, but as you'll see, there's very clear divide about how much I like or in at least one case don't like a movie. And this is kind of getting us ready for May, when there's going to be a whole bunch of movies that are sent out and released. So that one might be a little ways into the future before I take a look at that episode. Starting off with a witch-based movie with an Italian director, a movie called Witch Story.
Well, this card represents youth and innocence, possibly a child. The cards are confusing. There's innocence, but this card overlapping is evil. But it's all tied somehow to this card. The tower. Maybe this house.
It's not a game.
Here, the Addams Family?
What were you expecting, the Hilton?
Good morning.
Eating is the greatest thing in life without taking your pants off.
Yeah, like you've ever taken them off, fatso.
I don't like this house.
What the fuck kind of vacation is this?
Look what they've done to me.
Alessandro Capone is the director. I do believe he shot this in the state of Florida, so it is quite American in its nature. And it starts off with this kind of opening sequence, which I've seen in other movies, where there is a community that's upset about this woman who is a witch, and then they capture her and burn her at the stake. In this case, she is an... The relationship wasn't clear to me until later in the movie that this was some sort of a governess to this little girl. At first, I thought this was this little girl's mother. And there's this very somewhat creepy scene, I guess, to start the film, where the witch is telling this little girl that she is going to be in charge of evil, and that she's going to be following Satan. And there's this little blonde girl, and then we have the town with the pitchforks or the pitchforks and the fire, and they're charging through the town, and they're going to go and deal with this witch. But I was immediately confused about, and I continued confused about the timeline of this film, because I think they have a huge, it was, I'm sure, quite low budget, but they had a bit of a problem, because as the actors are walking through the town looking like it's kind of like the Salem witch trials or that era, way in the background of a shot, I see an intersection with a flashing light and cars going by. So obviously they weren't able to do another take of that one. But then there's a character for sure that when we later go into the modern part of the story, which is very much late 80s as the time frame, is apparently still alive. But again, I don't think that the look of it suggested that it was, I don't know, 40 years before or something like that. But anyway, I'm being very nitpicky here. And then one of the results of this, with this little girl afterwards, after her governess has been burned at the stake, is that she goes with this impulse and she jumps out of the window and apparently kills herself. Then we jump to these young people on a bus who are heading to this town, and they're going to spend their holiday in this house where there's a bit of this family connection, that this brother and the sister who just lost parents are taking their friends to. And then on this bus ride, there's this priest, this creepy priest appears out of nowhere, and when he finds out where they're going and has a big overreaction, and blood starts coming out of the priest's eyes. And then the priest disappears, and these girls don't seem to question like who was that and what's going on. When you know, there's a little bit of a discussion with this bus driver saying that there isn't a priest on the bus, but they kind of move on with their lives and don't. Oh, that was just some weird person there, which didn't seem like a natural reaction. So as you can hear, this is probably a movie where I was fighting it, and I kept fighting it throughout. So the young people get into the house. Predictably, creepy stuff starts to happen, and there's, you know, the usual stuff you would see in this type of a movie, or in a slasher movie where young people are in an isolated environment and people start dying and that kind of thing. A few weird things. There is this cousin who is actually from the town who knows a bit more about the house. And she has a strange relationship with her male cousin who she's never met before. The two of them are flirting with each other throughout the film. And it's really odd and not kind of given much of an explanation. And I mean, it's addressed, like, why are you flirting with your cousin? But I don't know. It's this weird thing in there. And I don't know if it's like the fact it was because it was a European director and writers, you know, but using an American cast of actors, and something was kind of lost in translation there. But that's kind of strange. One of the other things is, and I don't, you know, it's tough to recognize her other than a couple facial expressions and some shots here. This is 1989, but Amy Adams plays one of the characters, who one of the lambs for the slaughter in here, and she's with her boyfriend, and then once kind of the witch stuff starts happening, then she's been kind of turned into a witch, and she's dead, her and this other friend, and then they become kind of side villains for the rest of the film there. And again, it was, I saw the name Amy Adams, I thought, well, could that be Amy Adams? Didn't look a lot like her, blonde hair and everything, but then, you know, according to IMDb, this is actually the Amy Adams who's in this film. So if you watch it, you know, that might be something that, you know, might interest you a little bit. But things go really over the top, and there's a priest from who was connected to the opening sequence and the witch, and it was kind of the priest who was trying to tell the town this is not the way to deal with this. And there's a whole backstory there. The priest is supposed to be really old, and been, again, by the way I clocked that opening sequence, probably 100 years older than which makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, we're kind of our final, we kind of follow these two characters as kind of the final people. It isn't necessarily a final girl in this case. But there's a lot of time where the characters just kind of stand there while something else plays out. And they leap to this other house somewhere in the town. But suddenly it looks like, you know, all this stuff is happening at this priest's house, but it's not at the priest's house. It's back, they're back at this farmhouse where most of the action is taking place. So there's a lot of gaps in this film. It simply didn't work that well for me. You know, it wasn't that it wasn't entertaining, but I could predict some things, but I kept fighting these nitpicky things that it just seems like it was not very well put together as an overall film. And I would say there's about four or five false endings to this movie where I thought it was done. Then something else happened. I was like, okay, I can get behind that. Then we're done, right? No, we're on to this other gotcha moment. And then we're done. And then we're having this denouement scene that happens at, like, again, far away from where this town was. And then we have another gotcha, as well as this really, really bad voiceover, which is just explaining everything and the connection between the backstory to this story. It's almost like the moral of the story is, but we have a scene beyond that. So I really think that ending needed to be tighter. And yeah, just some things didn't quite work. I do feel like they're going for some sort of an, you know, in the era of Evil Dead 2, that type of a horror movie, but it just doesn't really scare me that much. I mean, it had a promising first scene. The first scene is actually really creepy, and a couple good sequences here and there, you know, a few good performances. The woman who plays the cousin, who kind of knows that, you know, as far as the ghosts of the witch and the little girl are still around, and kind of the evil around the house, she's quite good. I mean, you know, I would have liked more screen time with her in it, but other than that, I don't think there's a whole lot to recommend for a witch story. And I think this was supposed to be the big prize of this month's delivery. It was actually a 4K release, so it was a little bit of a disappointing start. But I've had disappointing starts with these movies, and then I've been able to kind of come around to some of the other ones. That was very much the case once again with this April delivery. The next movie, also from 1989, but again from a different part of the world, because we're looking at a bit of a kung fu film called Lady Reporter.
We prove that the counterfeit money is coming from Hong Kong.
Okay, what's the next stage?
We need to get a person in there and get that evidence out of there.
That's not going to be easy.
I'll do anything I can to get good scoops for the newspaper.
I'm in charge here, Missy.
You?
Wait and see, asshole.
Hey, this is my dad's insurance company. Why were you so rough?
You want to try my kung fu?
Of course I want to try it, you piece of shit.
Okay, Miss Know-It-All. To be a good reporter, it's important to be dirty, wicked, an asshole, and slimy. And looking at you, you don't fit the bill.
Or the other title, The Blonde Fury. The disc had two cuts. There was kind of an American cut and then a Hong Kong cut. I watched the Hong Kong cut. I tend to defer to that with films like this. On the disc, I had to kind of restart it because when I picked the Hong Kong cut, it wasn't giving me the subtitles. And so I felt I kind of needed to have those to watch the movie, even though it is an action film. So this movie stars Cynthia Rothrock. She plays Cindy, and she's an American FBI agent who travels to Hong Kong to infiltrate and arrest a criminal newspaper editor, Ronnie Dack, played by Ronnie Yu, who is printing counterfeit money using the newspaper's presses. This premise is pretty flawed. Why exactly is an American FBI agent, when they deal with stuff specific to domestic crimes in the United States, going over to Hong Kong, why do they need this FBI agent to come there and basically pretend to be a newspaper reporter to knock down this criminal enterprise? But anyway, that's what the setup is. While investigating Dak's crimes, Cindy works with her old friend, but they also sometimes refer to each other as cousins. And I wasn't completely sure if there was some sort of a family relation, and that might have been just a misinterpretation in the English subtitles. But her friend, Judy Yu, who's played by Elizabeth Lee, in pretty good performance. And there's an undercover cop named Shin Soo Ho as the actor. And there's this kind of nerdy journalist, Hoi Meng. And the four of them battle these kung fu henchmen that are backing this counterfeit plan. I don't know what to say exactly about the character development or the general storyline. And in particular, the use of humor is brutal. It is just not funny. But if you've seen some of these movies, you know there's going to be this kind of attempt. I mean, I think, you know, even though I roll sometimes with Jackie Chan movies, he's probably the master of this because he had a Buster Keaton kind of quality to him where the comedy doesn't play as bad as, you know, you can really bring it with the action sequences, but also the comedy feels okay. It's a little bit broad and a little bit goofy, but here the comedy I would have gotten rid of. I would much rather see kind of like a hard-boiled type of look, even with a ridiculous premise, than all of these kind of filler sequences to show how colorful and goofy these characters are and the stupid things that they do. Even the, you know, the relationship between the women is they kind of act like they're young high school girls as opposed to, you know, these are professional women, and one of them is pretty high up in the FBI. I get sometimes, like, when friends get together, they kind of revert to that a little bit, but I just didn't buy that these people were who they said they were. And there's some, like, really silly bits with there's this guy who's going to put the main gangster in jail, and they get to him ahead of time, and like, he's the lawyer, and they get to him the night before, and they drug him, and whatever they drugged him turned him insane, where he has this bizarre breakdown and gets paranoid in this really awful court scene, which makes no sense. And then for the rest of the movie, it's kind of like that. And then there's these silly attempts. The gang breaks him out of the hospital, and then they do this, you know, this picture to make it look like he's out of the hospital and he's going to testify against them, and all of these really elaborate, silly scenes, which seem like a waste of time. Now, I'm sounding really, 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 really negative about Lady Reporter. It brings it where it counts in the action sequences, the kung fu sequences. Cynthia Rothrock is really, really good in those scenes. The climax of the film totally delivers with all of these henchmen. I mean, take my brain out of my head. Why is in kind of this abandoned hideout where all this battle is happening? Why is kind of this getaway vehicle being driven by the main boss so that there could be this really kind of elaborate stunt sequence, which is actually very impressive and good. So, despite all of the goofiness, some of the acting choices and the story and the bad attempts at comedy, the action scenes, I think, are just enough to give this a very, very generous, mild, I'll say very mild recommendation. I think if you're a fan of kung fu movies from the late 80s, then Lady Reporter would be a film to check out. But it's definitely on the lower tier of the ones that I've seen. I mean, I would much rather see a Jackie Chan film or something directed by John Woo, for example. I do like my martial arts movies. Well, I appreciate some scenes of fun. I like them a little bit darker and a little bit more serious than Lady Reporter ends up being. But I think it was an interesting film, and I don't regret my time watching it. And I think it's enough for just pure action. Forget about everything else, or just fast forward through those scenes and get to the action scenes. And those ones are impressive enough towards the end to just save it. So not a ringing endorsement, but Lady Reporter is a movie that if you're a fan of that genre, that I think you will enjoy. And now we get to the best movie of the three. On the slipcover of this, I have one title, and then on the Blu-ray, I have a different one, but this movie is called The House Where Death Lives.
My name is Philip, Miss Stone. I'm Mr. Lamrock's executive secretary, and things have been a little grim around here these past few days.
Oh, you're going to take care of Mr. Langrock, thank God. Aren't you a pretty one?
Philip, who's in that room? I saw someone at the window when I came in.
Well, that room's been locked for years. It must have been a reflection.
Philip?
It shut down. Totally.
Tell me about your grandson.
You know almost as much about him as I do. I've never even seen him.
How do you do?
I've lost my parents.
I'm sorry.
It's unfortunate, Gabriel, that it took an event like this to bring us together. I hope this week has not been too hard for you.
Why do you keep Wilfred locked in that room? He hasn't done anything wrong, has he? I don't think it's fair. Grandfather says he can be violent, but he hasn't been that way with me.
Or the other title is Delusion. It is a movie from 1980, directed by Alan Beatty. Meredith Stone, played by Patricia Percy, joins the staff of the Langrock Mansion as a nurse to an invalid patriarch, Ivar Langrock, played by the great Joseph Cotten. And silly me, I didn't even, throughout the film, I didn't recognize that it was Joseph Cotten, the great actor of Citizen Kane and The Third Man and so many fantastic movies over the years. So it was, you know, kind of cool to see this late career role from Joseph Cotten. She starts to meet the staff at this house, at this mansion, as well as family members. And Ivar's grandson comes to live with him, Gabriel, played by John Dukakis. He's an awkward teen. He's recently arrived at the estate. He has lost his father. And then even though there is a twice the age or the age gap between Meredith and Gabriel, there is an attraction that she has to this boy. He's a 16-year-old boy, so I mean, there, you know, there's a lot of taboos and warnings in here. But the residents start getting bludgeoned to death one at a time, and that's leaving Meredith in this awkward position because she's trying to figure out who did this, but she strongly suspects that Gabriel, this troubled young man, is behind these bludgeoning deaths. And she's opportunities to try to let the authorities know about this, but her attraction to this young man is stopping her from doing this. And she feels that eventually she's going to become the victim. One thing I would do without is there's this voiceover narration by Meredith. I think I understand why it's in there ultimately. So maybe they keep it, but it could be limited a little bit more. But it felt very very much like a kind of a 1980s or perhaps 1990s TV movie type of an idea. You know, it is ultimately used effectively enough. There's a lot of colorful characters as there were in the previous two movies, but I didn't mind it too much. There's the butler Philip is quite a good character. He, you know, tries to keep everything up and keep the house in order, but he also has a bit of a drinking problem. So he often goes down to the cellar that isn't used anymore to drink this, you know, fine wine from generations ago that nobody can drink anymore. And it's established very, very early on that Meredith doesn't drink and that she has some trauma with a parent who was an alcoholic, and that gets explained a little bit later on connected to her backstory. There's a lawyer named Jeffrey Fraser who shows up kind of early in the film, and he's also very, very interested in developing a romance with Meredith, and they have some nice kind of flirtatious scenes. But as it goes, like, maybe she has it wrong, that maybe Jeffrey Fraser is actually the guy behind these killings and has a different motive too, and a bit of a darker side. This movie had better acting, like all around better acting of the three movies, hands down. Some creepy scenes. They use shadows very well, quite well directed. It has the psychological angle, which seems to be something that I really enjoy, and I talk about quite a bit with the traumatic backstory and how that is affecting the events of the story. There's a couple things that are a little bit predictable. There's this really there's this dog that gets introduced, so we kind of figure out, you know, in movies like this, what happens to the dog. It takes a long time to get to this discovery of that. There's some, you know, a bit of nudity and a bit of sex. There's a bit of a sex dream sequence and a very, very strange scene again where Gabriel just barges into Meredith's bathroom while she's having a bath, and they have this kind of accusatory kind of creepy conversation. And again, I am curious about on a rewatch how to take that scene. But and then the whole time you're kind of uncomfortable with this because this is a minor. He's still a minor, and she's an adult. And what is that all about? What's going on with that relationship? And why won't she just kind of tell people that, like, she has evidence that he is behind some of these deaths and the death of the dog. There's some of the deaths were really well realized. I think there's one that's a bit of a lame death where I'm not quite sure if this person would actually die given what was done, but that's okay. And towards the end, there's some really nice plot twists that happen. Everything kind of makes sense. I would say I didn't completely predict it. The thought was at the back of my mind that, you know, what ultimately was going on was going on, but that wasn't the direction I thought we were going. I kind of knew that the glaring obvious villain in this piece might not be the actual villain. So it's a very interesting film, and I mean I hadn't really heard of this 1980 movie before, and I'm really happy that I got a chance to see it. I mean, it is actually, you know, quite strong and one of the strongest movies I've had from these Vinegar Syndrome deliveries to this point. Either Delusion or The House Where Death Lives is a film that I think horror fans will enjoy and will get something out of. And if you are kind of a thriller or a mystery fan as well, I think this would be a terrific film if you can get a hold of it to see. So those are the three movies. Again, very, very quick overview of them. And so looking again at points first, and then I will let you know essentially which I'm going to keep and which I am going to shed from my movie collection. It was obvious, and it was obvious to you, I'm sure, listening, that which story was my least favorite of these. So I would give 1 point to which story. Lady Reporter or The Blonde Fury, I would give 2 points to. The action scenes save that one. Cynthia Rothrock is a very interesting lead, and, you know, really is. I think there's enough in there that I can justify giving, even though I waffled on it a little bit, giving the recommendation. She's, if nothing else, a really interesting action star. I haven't seen her in a lot of stuff. I'm sure those who watch a lot of Kung Fu movies or 80s action movies will know who this is and will be kind of more aware than I am of this actor. But the best one was the House Where Death Lives, or its other title, Delusion. It had me pretty much from the beginning. Again, the narration at the beginning threw me off for a moment or two, but then once we got into the story, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. This is actually a relief after the previous two films were not sitting as well with me. So then the decision is what stays and what goes. I'm very comfortable shedding from my movie collection which story. I don't plan to watch it ever again. I am going to keep Lady Reporter. I do think the action scenes and, you know, having a few more of these types of movies that I've grown to enjoy the last few years would be good. And ones that aren't exclusively from the starring Chow Yun-fat or Jackie Chan or directed by John Woo, like kind of broadening my horizons. And I've done that a little bit with getting into some of the Shaw Brothers films as well, as kind of the martial arts action movies of the 70s and into the 80s there. And so I keep kind of watching more and more of these and starting to appreciate this a lot more than, you know, when I first watched them and found them kind of cheesy in the 1990s. And definitely The House Where Death Lives is going to stay in my collection. I really enjoyed that movie, and I think it's going to improve on a rewatch too, knowing what's going on there and being able to watch for those things. I think it will be a good one to revisit at some point as well. That's it for my episode on my April delivery from Vinegar Syndrome. There'll be kind of a bigger episode or maybe a couple episodes connected to the May delivery. But until then, please check out Friendly Podcasts, Rank and Review, Film Feast, Lifetime of Hallmark, and Schlock and Awe. And please stay healthy, be kind to your neighbors, be kind to yourself, take care of each other, and keep supporting the movies as we are starting to get into the thick of the summer movie season of 2024. I haven't gone to the movie theater as much as I would like the last little while, but there's a whole ton of movies I'm looking forward to seeing in theaters coming soon. Or just watch movies at home or in any way that you enjoy watching them, but keep supporting the movies. And until next time, thanks again for listening. Take care.